You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, today we continue with part three of J. Reynolds' wonderful lecture on gardening. And on Monday, if you'll tune in, we'll tell you what's happening here and what we're preparing for and what we intend to do about it. So you'll get all that information on Monday. Right now we're working feverishly preparing documentary and sourced information in the law on our position. We will be preparing a web page on our website, which is http://harvest-trust.org. That's harvest-trust.org. Sometime, hopefully Sunday or Monday, you'll be able to go to a web page and see what's going on here, see the legal position that we have taken and that we will continue to stand upon, and what our plans are and what we're doing. So look for that. If you have a computer, you can access the internet sometime Sunday or Monday and find that information. Monday's broadcast will be devoted in whole to the current situation that's going on here. We expect sometime after the 1st of July to be under siege by the federal government. We will stand and fight. We will protect our rights. We will protect the property that we have been entrusted with to care for. I will always protect myself and my family with every means at my disposal, bar none. You can count on that. I took an oath when I was in the Air Force and then later in the Navy. I served my country under two military branches. And that oath was to protect and defend the Constitution for the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic. I have never been released from that oath. I will never release myself from that oath. And ladies and gentlemen, I will fulfill that oath. I don't care what the rest of you do. You can turn into the biggest bunch of abject cowards and rationalizers and bullshit artists that exist on the face of this earth, and you can explain it away yourselves any way you want to. But my family and I drew the line in the sand a long time ago. We will resist tyranny and evil wherever we find it, even unto death. Okay, get your pen and paper out and get ready to listen to the rest of Jay's wonderful talk on gardening.
Anybody else?
Lime.
Lime. To bring it more in the acid is a little harder. Any ideas about how you can make soil more acid?
Compost.
Yeah. Anything else?
Yeah.
Sulfur. Sulfur will do it, because then that sulfur mixes with water, it will form a sulfuric acid.
You can also use vinegar.
Yeah, right.
I'm serious. You can put vinegar in a spray bottle and just spray it with light, go to vinegar over the soil, and it's just enough to make.
Now, it's easier to bring a soil towards alkaline than it is to bring a soil an alkaline soil towards acid, because generally the alkaline soils have so much calcium, it's really hard to do it. But if you had a terrible alkaline, an alkaline soil even. You got that around here. You might have to do something. Compost is a good idea, though. It's a real good idea. Probably better than
a double salt. It's really alkaline and it's clay, too.
Mm-hmm.
Which calls for lots of compost.
Now, clay soil, I'll give you a little secret that I found out. What a clay soil is the finest soil. There's no soil that's, the particles are finer, but they tend to be shaped in a plate structure, like plates, and they pack together tight. That's why clay is so hard. And in order to loosen a clay soil, you can use lime to do that. It will help to loosen most clay soils. Now, another thing which is kind of fun, there's a substance called ammonium lauryl sulfate. Anybody ever seen that before? Or know where they've seen it?
It was in my chemistry set when I was a kid.
Okay.
You get that lime dog, turn green. Man.
What again?
I see that on lime, make it green.
Lawns? Maybe.
That's
it. It's the second ingredient behind water in shampoo. That will loosen a tight soil, believe it or not. Ammonium lauryl sulfate. What you want is no name, generic, cheap shampoo.
I got gypsum.
Gypsum is lime. Yeah, that's one form of lime. That will help to loosen up a clay soil, believe it or not. And I don't think it's harmful. I haven't found it to be harmful. I don't think so. I think it's a phosphorus, right? That's generally a source for phosphorus. But I'm not positive. But I haven't heard of it really being used for that specifically.
How about sand?
Sand can loosen up the soil, it's true. But you have to be hauling a big load of that. If that's what you need to do, you can't do it that way.
There's a lot of sand. It also helps drainage, too.
Yeah. Compost will do it, too. Any organic matter will loosen up that soil. And we need to have our organic matter higher and higher and higher. Over time, like Bill was saying, we've depleted our soil. When you take strictly, this is one of the problems with chemical fertilizers. For instance, nitrogen, especially nitrogen. If you have a soil that's high in organic matter and you put nitrogen to it, that organic matter breaks down and burns up. If you keep doing that and don't ever add any organic matter, what's going to happen? You're gonna lose your organic matter, and that is one of the main things that gives life to the soil. It also holds moisture better, and it provides that acid to break up the clay particles. And that's one of the main reasons why we've hurt our soil is for too much chemical fertilizer, nitrogen especially.
I got a positive thought.
Huh?
When the Red Army shows up at your door, think positive. Think of them as material for your soil, but one of nitrogen you got fresh will help us up.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, plant them off.
Now we've got a kick down next to it.
Huh?
Don't you have to be careful not to put too new manure on? Does the manure have to break down a little bit, otherwise it'll burn?
Well, you know, I was going to talk about that, and I never got to it. The strongest manure is bird or bat.
Oh,
guano. Guano, sea bird or bat.
Horse manure is usually empty, too.
Well, I believe your second would be pig or human, then goat or sheep, then I'm not sure whether a cow or a horse would be the strongest. I believe horse would be stronger than cow. They have a shorter digestive system. And we'll take this up after a break, okay?
Right on.
Well, do you think this
is the last.
Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We're just changing the tape, and that's just going to take, maybe 1 or 2 minutes, and the lecture will continue.
Where's Robert? Okay?
Yeah.
Oh, he took his guns to town, didn't he?
What does it mean if the compost pile is stinky? You said what?
You can't put meat products in it.
Meat?
Or animal products, or you can't put that in it.
And what did you say, Bill? It's not maintained properly? Yeah.
You can turn it over.
Yeah, in general, that's true. Just to give you a basic idea of the compost pile. The first one was probably when a farmer fed his animals, had in a pen or something, and it built up. He took it out and dumped it. He saw it got hot, like I said before. But if you were going to build one, here's how to do it. You need two components. Two components would be something with carbon in it, something with nitrogen in it, and the more nitrogen, the faster it will decompose. The more carbon in it, the more you'll have left over when it finishes. Believe me, it can really melt down to almost nothing. The other thing you need is water, because believe me also, if you don't have enough water, you'll almost end up with a pile of ashes when it's done. It's just really dry. So the amount of water that you would want to put in there is about equal to what you would have left in a damp sponge after you squeezed it out, just about like that. If you're going to put in hay or a lot of dry stuff, you'll have to water it. So if you're going to build a compost pile, have a source of water close by so you can water easy. And generally, a compost pile will have those things in it. You can put some soil in it, some dirt. That will help out too. That kind of tends to, there's just something about if you add a little bit of dirt, even a little bit of old compost, some people use for a starter, just like yeast, like you would make bread. So it's a heap is required. If you have too small of a pile, it will not be able to generate heat to keep itself going. And I usually found about 5 feet high, and I'll build it up like that. But to start off with, you do it in layers. You have a layer of a carbonous stuff and a layer of nitrogen stuff. Got any idea of carbonous stuff?
Leaves,
yeah. Hay or grass. If it's dry, the grass would count for carbon, but if it was real green grass, it would count for nitrogen. Some people even use a certain amount, a small amount of newspapers could be put in there. But if you don't get your pile, if your pile doesn't work right, you'll see those newspapers later on. They used to use some inks and newspapers that are not, that wasn't good, but now most of it's soybean ink, and I don't think it will hurt anything. But you can use just about anything. And they say not to put in meat products. I think anything that has a lot of fat will tend to seal it up. But in Arkansas, they have lots of chicken farms, and they do compost the dead chickens to dispose of them. Because what happens in the pile, you'll build it up layer upon layer, and bacteria will start to grow in this, and it will generate heat. I guess the only other thing I didn't mention in there is oxygen. And the pile needs to have some oxygen, or else it won't work right. So in the middle, we'll build up the heat, and I think you can get somewhere under 200 degrees at the most. Probably 140 is about what a good pile should make. To take the temperature, you get a stick and stick it in there, and once in a while you can pull it out, feel on the end of it, feel how hot it is. And really and truly, you can compost dead animals, human waste, you can compost anything. And that's probably the only way you really should use human waste, would be to compost it and try to get it right in the middle, not all over the outside. When it, after a time, it'll cool down. That's when you need to turn it over again, putting the stuff that's on the outside over beside it and the bottom, and then taking the rest and layering it on top, because that outside, it won't decompose at all. It'll look just like it did in the beginning. And when you you're finished, what you'll end up with, you can use it before it's finished. You don't have to turn it into its most basic form. You can use a certain amount of the leaves that are kind of crumbly, and maybe some twigs or whatever. So you can use it before it turns completely black. In fact, what will happen is it'll start to heat up the second time, the third time. If you're lucky, it might go a fourth time, but probably not after that. You can leave it again and let it age more, but it's really not going to do anything for you after that. It's probably at its best. What you're doing is you actually are eating up some of that free nitrogen. But what you're turning it into is humus, which is something the plant can use just as well, and in turn will re-release the nitrogen later on. It's not a fast-acting fertilizer, but it's a long-acting fertilizer. So if you wanted if you had a plant you really wanted to give it a quick boost, you could use some manure around that plant instead of the compost. But the compost is a long-term process. It's something that will build the soil real good. And if we can't go to the store and buy fertilizer, that's a good option for us. You can put just about anything in there that's organic and natural. Any questions on the compost?
Do you recommend some of these barrel-type things that they rotate and all that? What's your opinion on that?
They work, and you could use them, but you're not going to get very much. If you think about it, I think you're going to reduce what you start out with by at least down to half. So when you start out with a barrel full, and you end up with a wheelbarrow full, that's just not going to go very far. Now, a small garden, yeah, it would, but you really couldn't depend on something that small to feed yourself. Now, I do it in a pile because I really try to do a big amount. But some people have a good luck with bins. It kind of keeps it more neat, keeps it together. Make sure you make two bins so you can move it from one to the other one. get them a place to, when you, that's the easiest way to turn it, is to just put it in a completely different pile when you turn it.
Mm-hmm. If you live in a rainy area, or it's going to be winter, it's going to snow, you should cover it.
Yeah, for the long term, you should cover it. And I like to build mine under a tree, too. It makes it nicer to work in, and it probably protects it a little bit. A dry area, you might want to leave the top a little flat to catch water. But if you really should have a water source, no matter what, no matter where you're gardening, you probably should. But for long term, you should cover it up, or else put it on. Go ahead and use it. Make sure you get a good heat, or else if you put something in there with seeds, they'll come up. And if you use, if you grow tomatoes, rotten tomatoes and stuff in there, you probably, and use open pollinated tomatoes, you probably never need to plant tomatoes again, because they'll come up. And you'll find all kinds of new stuff coming up. Tomatoes come up good, and squash, pumpkins. You can get a lot of good seedlings out in the compost pile.
Don't put worms in there, though. The heat will kill the worms. Put the worms in the garden after you've added the compost.
Yeah, you sometimes can find the worms in the soil under where you have a compost pile, though.
Yeah.
They'll live down in the soil. They'll come up and grab something and take it back underground. If you're looking for fishing worms, that's sometimes a good place. An old pile, they'll move in there pretty good too. But it's true. One thing with chemical fertilizers, it does tend to, especially if you go heavy with it, it'll tend to kill off worms in your garden. So if you can use compost, you won't be killing off those worms. Anybody know what the worms do? Yeah, when they tunnel, they make air places in the soil, so find water places so the water can go down. Yeah, their manure is just as good or better than anything else, any other kind of manure. So worms are good. I saw on a website from Australia, a fellow went to a homestead, some land. He asked for the worst land they had. I don't know why he was trying to prove a point. What he did, he planted mango trees on this red soil that had no grass whatsoever, been overgrazed in a drought, and the soil was in a terrible state. And then he would put rocks, large flat rocks, underneath these mango trees and put worms under them. They could stay under the rock and do pretty good, but then he planted a certain type of grass or plant, and it took him some years, but he turned that into a productive farm where it was the worst soil that anybody had, and he never touched a plow through the ground. Just worms. Well, I've got one more handout here. I passed out a sheet to talk about gardening versus farming, but I didn't do much explanation on it, and now's the time I'm going to work on that, so you might look at that one too. That was had to do with square foot gardening, and what I'm going to tell you about is ways to get more out of a given amount of soil, a given amount of land. And that's good, because if you can get more out of the same amount of soil, you have less work in general, less weeds to deal with, you need less compost, although the more the better. It goes, you can put on heavier, in other words. And on a small scale, this works, whereas it doesn't work so good on a large scale. What I'm talking about is a method. It's called the deep bed method, or a bed planting method. You know, when we see corn and wheat grown, big farms, they'll have long rows, but that's not always the best. Main reason why they do that is so they can drive a tractor down through there and do all the work. So, the alternative, say this is, you're in an airplane looking down, and you see the corn growing in a row like this, and another row like this. Could be cabbage or whatever, lettuce or whatever. And the tractor wheels can go through here and go through here. So you got a path in between each row. And they can drive down with cultivators and scratch the ground here and keep weeds out. But the way that it's become popular lately, instead of doing it like that, you would possibly do three rows of corn. Now this is looking at an airplane, looking from above. And then you would have a path where you could walk. There's a footprint. There's another footprint. So you got it. What you've got is three rows in the place of maybe two. And you've got a path on each side. What you've also got is the leaves from these are tending to shade the ground. That's going to keep weeds down because they don't like to grow in the shade, most of them. It's also going to shade the ground from the sun. So the water will stay in there better, won't dry out so much. And it's becoming popular even with some farm crops. It doesn't work maybe so good with corn, but the smaller plants, it works real good on. If you look at it from a side, what it really is going to look like is a bed and a path. And then you can continue on with another bed and another path. And you would plant your plants here. And walk here. Got anybody have an idea what all this helps besides shading?
Get more plants or whatever.
Yeah, less path, more plants. Any other ideas?
Less weeds.
Could be less weeds, yeah. There's enough, there's one thing that plants need that a lot of people don't think about. They need water, they need air. Believe it or not, plants need air. And this helps air to go in to the soil. The race part, plants can drown. If you've got heavy soil and you get water just sitting there all the time, plants can drown. They need air. The organisms that live in the soil, they need air too. In order to break down that compost and produce what the plant needs, it has to have some air in there. So this helps also. Another thing it helps, if you've got, now this would be on a little bigger scale than I should have shown maybe, but if you've got two rows and you walk up and down here all the time, that ground is going to get packed down. And when it gets packed down, water can't go in there. It might seal up the ground even. So you're not packing down where the roots are growing. You're walking in a path instead. Another thing, when you farm this way, and you go to put your compost on the land, you just kind of have to spread it because you may not know exactly where you're going to plant later on. So you may actually be fertilizing your path where your roots are not going to go. When you're growing with a bed system, you're going to put your compost right on here and not on the path. So you're not going to waste it that way. I started doing this a few years back when I had my farm in the Virgin Islands, and not many people had seen it. People used a lot of hose and single row methods, but it really can work. And I used to also use a lot of mulch. An organic material. Some people use plastic sheets, but I don't like it. An organic material that lays on the soil and does these four things on the handout. Controls the weeds, It helps to hold water by acting as an insulating blanket. It helps to prevent erosion because the water doesn't actually strike the ground. It takes a little bit of time to infiltrate through that mulch. And some soils when it rains right on the soil, it will actually crust it and make it impermeable. You know, it won't take up any water after it gets packed down by rainfall. And when the mulch sits there long enough, the little worm will come up at night, grab a piece and take it back down deep in the ground and use it and turn it into manure for you. It'll disappear. I've seen mulch completely disappear. And I didn't take it anywhere. Some little worm took it. So for mulch, you can use all kinds of things. Grass, hay, leaves, pine needles, bark, wood chips, sawdust, cotton seed hulls, rice hulls, or any agricultural waste. Needles, bark, wood chips, sawdust, cotton seed hulls, rice hulls, or any agricultural waste. I know they use a lot of sugar cane in Hawaii, right? That's good for mulch. We use that for...
It does one other thing, too, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
It provides heat around the plant as it begins to decay. It keeps the plant warm at night. It should get a little bit too cool. And it provides the heat above the roots. You never want heat around the roots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I had never experienced that, but it probably does help when you're in a hot situation, a cold night situation. I have noticed one thing I've never seen before until this year, but early spring, I got frost in the path. But I didn't get frost on top of the bed. And that's because the coldest air fell down in there. And it didn't frost my ceilings. Whereas it did frost down in the bottom of the path. That's the only place that had it. So there's another reason, I guess, that I hadn't thought of. Now, in the Virgin Islands, I used to cart this, go to a field that fellow let me cut any amount of grass I wanted. It was tall grass, called guinea grass, goes about this high, and real thick, heavy. And I could cart it, take it back, spread it out, but that was a lot of work. I had 2 acres that I had mulched. And so I'd go in my pickup truck, weed eat it, cut a little weed eater, fork it into the truck, haul it, work it out, spread it. That got to be a lot of work. One day, I let a piece of one bed go and turn into grass. I was busy doing something else. I didn't have a plant there, anything planted. So this bed grew up in grass. Well, I had to go and cut it down before I did anything. So I cut it down. I threw it over on the bed next to it. And I started thinking, hey, that was pretty easy. I lost that bed real easy. So eventually, my 2 acres was a strip of grass and a strip of crop, and a strip of grass and a strip of crop. It took half my land, but I found that the labor that it saved and the extra production that it made, it made up for it. Plus, what I would do is, every other year, I would change them around. I'd pull the grass up from here and plant it over there. So I was rotating half of my soil all the time. It worked really good. The island has had to purchase 2,000 acres of former sugarcane land. And I really tried to get people that, and this was supposed to be subdivided into plots that people could use for gardening, but there was no water. And my farm didn't have water either. We had a saltwater well that just couldn't use for irrigation anymore. But we kept having crops without water, and we won prizes. So I really tried to get the government to do this and mechanize it with a machine that would just run down the row and throw it over on the side. When I left, actually, they were considering it, but as I found out, they haven't ever done it. And I don't know why, but it could really make a big difference for them. I don't know if y'all have any. I haven't found a grass crop in my climate that could do that, though. The other grass was so productive year-round. Maybe there is. I looked at one called comfrey. You ever heard of comfrey? It's a herb, but also grows real thick and real big. I've got one bed of that started to see if it'll be able to make enough for the next bed. Well, that's kind of aside, but has anybody grown in beds before?
Well, I just started the gardening
thing. Mm-hmm. It's basically the same idea. It's the main ideas there are that you don't walk on the place you plant. It's a permanent bed, and it's raised. What the raisin does, it gives you more room for air, more room for your roots to go into undisturbed soil. Strawberries are one that commercial companies are using with that. They've even developed some machinery that will build the beds behind the tractor and plant them. You might have seen them, you know, from California. I think they do it out there. Some people do use the plastic. I'm not in favor of it because it doesn't do three of the things that are on this list. Well, it doesn't do two of them. It says, you could say that it prevents erosion, but all it's doing is sending the water somewhere else to erode somewhere else. It does prevent soil packing, but it doesn't control weed. It does control weeds, but it absolutely doesn't do anything for your fertility. You got to throw it away eventually. And let's see. Oh, I was going to talk about different kinds of mulch. I have it written down here for you, but and I think I mentioned it before, the sawdusts or other things like cotton seeds, if you live in that area, or any kind of fine stuff you can use by planting your seed. You actually just put that seed on top of the ground, don't cover it at all, and then cover it over with sawdust. I think Gary was talking saying that it was hard to grow lettuce. Well, I've never failed just sprinkling the lettuce seed on and then just sprinkle the sawdust on top. It's just perfect. It can work really good. Now, this year I had a lot of hay. I got a good cutting of hay last fall and saved it all up for the spring. So I did all my paths in hay, but then I did the tops in sawdust because I like the way the seeds can come right up through that sawdust so easy. If you live in a wheat area or rice, maybe you get a straw, same thing as hay, maybe even better. And anybody know any other things that they might be able to use for mulch that I hadn't thought of, that maybe something special in your area?
Hair is supposed to be real good. You can get that for free at barbecues.
Hair, yeah. It takes a lot of hair, though, I guess.
You mix it in with the other stuff, it's really supposed to be good.
Yeah, you can't get it at my barber shop.
Yeah.
So hair could be used, okay? I guess you get enough. Any other ideas?
Pine needles?
Yeah, pine needles will work. They really will. And you can go out, I see they walk right out there. They could use it right here.
Newspaper works too.
Yeah, my neighbors have been using, they've been using the newspaper, and because it doesn't look so good, they put the hay on top of it, and probably works real good that way. It's a double thing, but I have to admit, there's some weeds that do come through the hay or straw. They will, but since your soil is kind of soft on the bed, they're pretty easy to pull. They're once in a while, and they pull out pretty easy. Yeah.
I've heard that when you use a newspaper, that the soil absorbs this heat and it gets into the ground, isn't it?
I looked into it, and really most of your inks are based on soybean. your print inks from newsprint. What do you know what's on your news on Veritas, Dylan?
No. All I know is words. The truth. No, no. But all I know is newspaper makes you a little bit more. And but it doesn't look good enough.
Yeah.
Once it gets wet, you know, it stays there, it sort of seems to shelf in place and it won't blow away.
So you use it just right on top? Yeah, I would think so. I guess the same thing. It ought to work. Yeah, it probably would. Anything, the finer you get it, and that goes for your compost pile, the finer you can get it, the quicker it will decompose.
I've read that, you know, when you use the colored sections of the newspapers, the ads and like the comments and stuff like that, because the dyes and that are still toxic, but the black and white, like you said, it's mostly soy based.
Yeah, you have to be kind of careful. Some people really go overboard on their the cautions. I may have really been off on that steel slag we were talking about on the break. I did get that reference from a good organic gardening book. The author was John Seymour, and he recommended it. But he's from England, so maybe there's some difference. Maybe he just used a small amount. He didn't say how much to use. But I'd be aware that, according to what some of them told me, that it may not be good. But, you know, at the top here, I talk about the biodynamic method. And if you read there, it's popularized by Rudolf Steiner, the founder of the Anthroposophical Society. It's very close to the mysteries.
Yep.
And there, I've noticed a lot of the gardening books will start talking about the magic crystals and magnets and so on. They use special cow horns packed with dung as a compost starter. You have to put them in the ground for a year on the full moon, and on and on and on. That sounds like a religion to me. And I haven't been able to explain it. I haven't tried it, but I think probably. Yeah. So they use some special stuff, and just to let you know that I don't necessarily believe in it. Probably if they're using beds and compost, that's probably what's doing the good for them. Down at the bottom, I talk about deep digging. Well, if you really got a lot of energy, you can do this. And the way you do it, okay. Anybody got a lot of energy?
No.
It warms you up if you do it in the wintertime, but what you do is, if you have a plot of land, and let's say there's somebody with a lot of energy, borrows a lot of time, if you don't go to work anywhere else, I guess you got a lot of time if you don't have a lot of energy. Well, normally you can dig down one spade depth and say, just say 8 inches, 12 inches, and you've got a pretty well tilled garden. You turn that over and stir it up, loosen it up. But if you wanted to, you could dig out this part here, put it over here, then go a little bit further down, one more depth, or at least loosen it up like with a fork, a spading fork rather than a shovel. And you've loosened it up very deep. And they say that the roots can penetrate. Most of them probably can go down that deep. One important thing, don't ever mix your subsoil with your topsoil. That's not good, because you're actually making the topsoil poorer is what you're doing. With time, if those earthworms can get down there, though, they'll turn this subsoil into topsoil. You'll find a lot deeper topsoil in time. Then you put that back in, what you should do. But the one way they say you can do that is to put that first one over here. Let me start over there. Okay. We dig the first spade down, put it over here on this side. But then the next one, you put it over here. Just keep on down the line. Some swear by it, they say that really helps out. And if you got the time and the energy, it probably wouldn't hurt. Anybody have a rotor tiller?
Yeah.
How do you like them? Can you do it on it?
Better than a shovel.
Yeah. Two kinds of rotor tillers. There's a front kind that has a rotating teeth in the front. Then there's a rear tine, rotating teeth in the back. The front tine tends to be a lot harder to control, especially if your ground is tough, because it actually can pull you along and it can send you for a ride on hard ground. The rear tine has powered wheels that hold it back, that keep it from running away as those tines dig into the ground. Does everybody know what a tiller is, basically, or have an idea what it is? But it has a gasoline engine, tines that dig into the ground like a thousand midgets with hose chopping away real quick there. And it does a good job, and it does things you probably couldn't do by yourself. And it makes it a lot easier. They sell different sizes, and I've had the biggest one that they make, and the smallest one that they made. I'm speaking of one that was 24 inches wide. The one I have now is 18 inches wide. And I think the 18-inch one is better. I really do. It's so much easier to control than a big one.
We have the Mantis.
Okay, well, that's a real little one, isn't it?
It's a real little one, and it's fantastic, and it's just incredible work.
Now, that one has a small two-stroke engine, like a chainsaw, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Jim?
One point I recommend on it, you get a rear-driven tiller.
Uh-huh.
Get one with large wheels, because the larger the wheel, the more traction.
Mm-hmm.
I got one that's got tiny wheels and it's skinned back, and then you got to turn it into the wrong.
I
recommend large wheels.
Well, you must have good soil if you have to help it along.
Yeah.
Because if you have bad soil, that thing will run away with you. They really will. But the brand that I favor is called Troy-Bilt. They're built strong. The ones from Sears or Western Auto, or they're cheaper, and they're built cheaper, and they may not last as long. I tell you, if I had my choice between my last tank of gas to drive somewhere and saving that gas for my rotor tiller, I'd save it for the rotor tiller. It's really worthwhile having. And they may cost you some money, but you can be surprised if you look for a used one, they can be pretty cheap too.
The one we have, the Manus, is a small one. It doesn't have wheels, it just has tines.
Yeah.
But it's guaranteed out of condition for the first 2 years. And after that, the tines are guaranteed forever. And we've been using it for over 5 years, and we don't do anything to prepare it for the winter or the summer. When I pull it out in the spring, I pull it about 5 or 6 times, and it starts right up, and it's great. And it's not real expensive.
It's probably real light, easy to handle, too. You can just pick it right up.
Yeah.
I've seen that ads for those. Let's see, the only other thing, any questions on planting specific crops, specific types of seeds, how you would do that?
Back to the page. I guess this is a suggestion that, you know, if you like, you want to plant lettuce as early as possible.
Yeah.
In areas where you have frozen ground, you can cut it out there right on top of the ground, frozen, and it'll come up and be found. thing I found when you're trying to do a small seed is put in a salt shaker, and you don't get so many in one spot.
Yeah, I've done that too, and there's even something else you can take sand or something to dilute that seed, and it's even better because because since you're shaking just a small amount of seed, sometimes it's hard to see where you've even done it, especially if they're the same color as the soil. So if you add some sand or something light colored along with that, it dilutes it too, but also you can see where you've been working or been covered. That works real good, the shaker, a pepper shaker or a salt shaker, depending on the size you want, the size of holes.
The garden down in Texas, I don't know how it would work up here, but I see no reason why it would work up here, is a lot of sand. Because it's rich in minerals, and if you keep your soil from compacting up, it's just tremendous. You'll get a growth that's darn near double from what you're not allowed to put in here.
That's what Bill was saying earlier. Are you using lava sand as a fertilizer?
Yeah, and as a compost.
Uh-huh. Well, that gets back to the origin of our soil, which is the weathering of rocks.
Yeah.
And the closer you can get to that rock, the better off you are. I think there's different ways the soil gets built up. It can get built up in a river situation. It can be built up by glaciers, ice pushing soil together and scraping. It can be built up by volcanoes, another one. Floods, which I guess that's like river soil.
Don't believe this stuff about the wind blowing the topsoil away. Where did it blow it to?
Well, you know, I recently saw a show on the Dust Bowl, and then and showed what it looked like before and after during the Dust Bowl. And then last year I drove right through the Dust Bowl, and they sure changed it back to something. And it was interesting what Miles was saying yesterday about the climate change that happened at the end of the 1800s that probably contributed or would have contributed to the end of the buffalo. And I wonder if the climate was a lot different when these pueblos were built. Maybe they had a lot more rain to work with.
Well, the real answer to the Dust Bowl is what Miles said yesterday. The buffalo would have died out anyway because the climate changed and drought came to the plains. And here they were cultivating what had traditionally been grassland where there are no wind breaks. And when it dried up and the rain didn't come, well, even if they planted and the plants started to sprout, it's like here in Arizona in some places, without outside water being applied to the plants all the time, they won't grow because the wind just sucks the life right out of the plants and dehydrates them before they can get their root system established deep enough to be able to replenish the water that the wind is sucking out. So that's the real reason. That's the real reason for the so-called Dust Bowl. They were breaking ground and they're planting crops in a place that was becoming a drought place. Now you go through those states where the Dust Bowl had occurred before, and what you see is they planted huge lines of trees to break the wind, and they created artificial reservoirs and lakes, and they brought the groundwater table up. They built dams along the rivers, and there's probably just as many lakes in Oklahoma that there is now, there didn't used to be, that there is in probably any other state in the Union outside of maybe Wisconsin or Minnesota, which is nothing but lakes.
You know, when I was talking about my farm in the Virgin Islands and how I had one strip of crop and one strip of grass and so on, the Virgin Islands is marginal for the tropics. They got, if they were lucky, they got 40 inches of rain, and of course they had full-time sun and wind along with that. So 40 inches north, it's not quite as much as 40 inches in the tropics, so they were sort of marginal. And not only did the grass provide mulch, but it did a windbreak too. And I was there for Hurricane Hugo with 200 mile an hour winds. And granted, most all my crops were killed off, But just 2 weeks before the hurricane, I had planted little hot pepper seedlings. They survived 200 mile an hour hurricane winds, and that was the only thing that I had left that continued to grow that was planted before the hurricane. And I got an article in Organic Gardening about that.
And that's it for today, folks, for the Hour of the Time. Be sure and tune in Monday for another episode of the Hour of the Time with yours truly, William Cooper. And we'll bring you up to speed on what's going on around here and what we're doing about it. So don't miss that broadcast. It's going to be a very important one. You're listening to 101.1 FM Eager.